Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today will be an empowerment hour, the latest on healing and health, adding years onto your life or what you're doing to take years off of your life. I'm going to share six signs that you're actually suffering from vitamin C deficiency and don't know it. I'll also be talking about what are the ways that we can increase thermogenesis. That means we can lose weight without extra calorie counting. Also, the latest on preventing and reversing cancers. And what if you have medical conditions, legitimate, but they're not being diagnosed? Instead, you're being given a label of ADD and ADHD, put on meds, but your underlying real medical condition was missed. I'll give you 10 medical conditions that share symptoms with ADD and ADHD that are missed. Also, why having a good amount of healthy bacteria in your gut can allow you to prevent a stroke. Those are just some of the topics on our health and nutrition segment. Then in the environmental part of our program today, what is one of the largest single ways that we end up with greenhouse gases and global warming? What do you think? If you had to guess the top three, what would they be? I'm going to give you the answer and why we can change it, but I'm curious to see if you know the answer. So let's see if you can name the top three, or even one of the top three. Let's go to 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and let's make it a little more specific. How do you contribute to that? Also, a commentary from Luke Eastwood from Global Research, Silent Spring, and the reckless use of pesticides in modern agriculture. Now, I'm particularly concerned about this because we don't seem to have learned very much as a society. Certainly individuals have. That's why we have people choosing organic gardening. But for the majority of Americans, they'll eat anything, and they don't care about where it was grown, how it was grown, what was used on it, what it'll do to the environment, to our water, to our air, to their bodies, to their children's bodies. Hard to imagine that we have this indifference, but it's true. And there'll be a commentary on that. And then sizzling heat, storms, and wildfires. This is just the beginning. It's going to get a lot worse, a lot faster, starting in the next 12 months. Also from our environmental segment, a new study is predicting a 6 degrees Celsius rise. That will, quote, be the end of business as usual. This is about shock tactics. It's simple math. If we don't change radically, and now, it is game over for the way we live and for a lot of people. They're expecting as many as 16,000 people to die because of global weather conditions per day. Per day. And yet, we will not do anything about it. We can't. Why can't we? I'll explain. Then from our issue segment today, America's most dangerous enemy. From Adam Greenberg from Alternet. It's not who you think. You'll be surprised. A very good commentary from Adam Greenberg. Then I will share in about 10 minutes from now two issues that are extremely important to me and I hope will become more important to everyone else. Why homeless people sleep in the cold and die. And also millions live on $2 a day in America. The problem isn't just a safety net, it's the whole economy. And I'll be sharing from the Daily Cause on that, as well as from Piper Hoffman on those two issues. Now, to prove my point of how it's invisible, I invited a person I know, a friend of mine, who is extremely socially conscious. He has been at the forefront and a major participator in all the major environmental movements of the last 30 years. Well, the other day we had dinner, went to a movie, and then had a conversation afterwards all about what it means to be poor in America. At the end of the conversation, a person who had joined us for this evening left, and I asked my friend, I said, how much do you think that person lives on a day? I don't know. What do you think? Give me a guess. I have no idea. $2 a day. You're kidding. Why, did you expect them to look a certain way, dress a certain way, act a certain way because they're poor? So here is a man who has earned hundreds of millions of dollars, possibly billions, who couldn't even recognize a $2-a-day American when they were right in front of him and spent an evening. It was just a test. He failed. How many times do we fail to recognize the problems around us? As if somehow we're only galvanized when there's a national crisis, as we're just seeing with this shooting. We'll talk about that. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. And this is a talkback show. So today, throughout the entire program, I'll be encouraging you to call in and share your comments and points of view, your thoughts, your challenges on any issue that you feel is important. Our number to call in from anywhere in North America and Canada is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And a special hello to all the cab drivers right now in the United States who are either tuned in to their terrestrial station in Washington, D.C. on PFW, Los Angeles area on KPFK, New York on BAI, or the most of all, over the telephone. Yes, believe it or not, we're number one in the world from the largest service that provides to hundreds of stations and companies for people to listen in. And we have tens of thousands. That's good, because now no one is locked into their house at this hour of the day. They can go anywhere and just take their phone with them and put it on speakerphone, or use a cordless, and to rent a car, use a handless phone and just tune it on anywhere. You can hear the show, 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. Now, I understand that recently some of you were not able to get on. That's because, unfortunately, there are so many people trying to get on, they didn't fit because the bandwidth, which has been expanded repeatedly, has to be taken over, and I'm suggesting today in a letter, to an additional 100,000 listeners. So they're working on it, so nobody should be excluded from getting on there and listening in the next week or two. There was a time in the United States where if you had scurvy, which very few people do, then you were deemed to have inefficient amounts of vitamin C. You were deficient. But I said, how would you know if you had subclinical deficiency, meaning you don't have classical, but you have subclinical, like a weakened immune system, more susceptible to colds and flus, where you feel low energy, where you bruise a lot, and your body isn't able to fight against cancer? You wouldn't know, because it's not always that obvious. But medicine either said you were well or you were sick. Now imagine this. Imagine the paradigm. Imagine how this just shocks the consciousness of anyone who comes from logic and reasoning. It was this. Remember President Clinton went in to get his annual checkup, which is extensive, by the way, and they always select what the specialists who are considered the finest examples of that specialty in America, and he was given a clean bill of health. And 3 weeks later, he was rushed in for emergency triple bypass surgery, or he would have died. Well, what was it? Was he totally healthy with a clean bill of health, or he was near death? He was near death. They missed it because they were looking for classical signs. For example, you won't know that your artery to the carotid artery up to the brain is substantially occluded, even 90% occluded, unless you have very special tests taken. you won't know that you have an inflammatory hormone or, inflammatory cells that tell you that you are at risk of a heart attack or cancer. They're called C-reactive proteins, and they're also called homocysteine and fibrinogen. You have to test for that. You wouldn't know you're deficient in the master hormone, which is causing loss of muscle mass and depression, insomnia, and fatigue, unless you test for it. So the lack of testing means that you're not going to have a clear understanding of your condition. This is also true with vitamin C. So here are six signs that you may not be getting enough vitamin C. And I never meet anyone who gets enough vitamin C. And I've done a lot of research on vitamin C, and I've written on it. I've done clinical studies on it. I've done laboratory experiments on it. I even used myself as a human guinea pig. And that's how I was able to create protocols that were able to help a lot of people, thousands of people. And now other doctors are using the protocols and have been. What I did at the Tri-State Healing Center and on 84th Street when we were there for 2 years, to show that people with cancer, heart disease, AIDS, and other conditions can be benefited, but at very high doses, far beyond what you could take orally. First up, low-level energy. When someone tells me that they have chronic low-level energy, instead of suggesting what will enhance mitochondrial function and adenosine triphosphate production, or ceasing mega-channeling, which is the loss of your mitochondria energy, instead I've looked for vitamin C. And also, one of the first signs that a person is having mild depression, vitamin C deficiency. Even the density of a person's bones would be vitamin C. And also, since acidosis and scurvy are similar, the classical acidosis symptom of wasting away becomes evident while losing weight. Next up, ask your holistic dentist, how many of your patients' gums bleed? Not profuse bleeding, but when they're flossing or brushing or using a water pick, you'll notice traces of blood coming out. Now then the body, you know, will clot it up, but it's still bleeding. That is a sign of vitamin C deficiency. Also, are there teeth that are loose? Loose teeth are a sign of vitamin C deficiency, as is gingivitis. Therefore, you're having a deterioration of your gum tissue. And also, that's a vital loss of vitamin C to collagen, which you need. What if you have rapid mood swings? You're irritable. That's also could be a sign of vitamin C deficiency. If you bruise, and if the bruise doesn't heal quickly, that's a sign of vitamin C deficiency. Also, chronic pain. Yes, it's due frequently to inflammation, but vitamin C deficiency exacerbates it. And anemia is another possible sign of vitamin C deficiency. So those are some of the things that can make a difference. In fact, there was a study at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, Department of Neuroscience, and it was published in the Journal of Neurochemistry. They came up with some interesting observation. They used mice, which were genetically engineered to deactivate the genes that normally provide their own vitamin C. And, of course, those mice were kept alive and healthy by externally providing them vitamin C. But for the purpose of this study, they created periods of not providing ascorbic acid or vitamin C and then reintroduced it. And before and after each period, blood samples were taken. And they looked at behavioral patterns and depression and all the symptoms, compulsions were shown when vitamin C was deprived. And also, they ate more sugar. Well, we've got a lot of sugar addicts. So I'm simply saying that something as inexpensive, as safe, as beneficial to the body as vitamin C, we should not be deficient in. Coconut oil. It's good for your skin. It's great to massage into your scalp at night. You could either do one night olive oil, extra virgin cold press olive oil, massage a little bit, about a half a teaspoon, massage that into your scalp and to your hair and leave it on all night, or coconut oil. They're both great for your skin and your hair. But when you use coconut oil and chili peppers together, It increases thermogenesis, and that can lead to weight loss. According to a recent study, they found that capsaicin and green tea and mustard and chili peppers, all become in the body active in being able to induce thermogenesis and improve satiety and decrease energy from being diminished. So if you want to eat less, have some chili, have some cayenne, have some spice. Next up, we better understand why getting a good night's sleep could also help with weight control, because a joint study, according to Natural Society, an article, The Sleep Factor, Understanding How Sleep Affects Your Weight, shows that this was done at the University of Chicago and University of Wisconsin, found that when you sleep longer, let's say 8.5 hours each night, they lost more fat and conserved more muscle than people who slept less than that. So we don't want to have too much sleep because that'll make us fat, and we don't want too little sleep. But you got to get the right amount of sleep, and that's why I suggest don't eat anything within 3 hours of going to bed. If you're really hungry, then have some ice, crushed ice, with some lemon juice on it. Lemon juice over crushed ice, you lose your appetite. If you absolutely, positively have to have something in your stomach, or you can't go to sleep, then unsalted popcorn, organic popcorn, that'll do the trick as well. Something's really good to protect your body from cancer, and it's green tea. Another study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition showed that green tea will lower the risk of different cancers in the body. So I'm suggesting, adding on to what I shared yesterday about green tea, no reason not to have more green tea. Children's doctors warn of a return to 19th century disease if current trends continue. Why? Because we're deficient in vitamin D. Now, vitamin D is very inexpensive, easy to get, and yet we're deficient. And as a result, children's doctors are warning that vitamin D deficiency is now coming back. And that can induce diabetes. It can result in higher tuberculosis, multiple sclerosis, and rickets, a bone disease uncommon in the last 100 years. And that's according to scientists from the Royal College of Pediatrics and Child Health in Britain. So we need vitamin D, and we need to get it into our kids each day as well. And finally, a common childhood leukemia may be treated with a vegetable compound. This is mainstream medicine. This is Medical News Today, Baylor College of Medicine, and published in the highly respected PLOS ONE medical journal. Quote, I'll quote this. It looks like your mother was onto something when she said, eat your vegetables. A concentration of a compound called sulforaphane found in, you know what it's found in? We talk about it all the time. Many of you get it every day when you have your green powders that you get. It's from broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables. How about that? They discover cruciferous vegetables and cancer. Quote, has been shown to reduce the number of acute lymphoblastic leukemia cells in the lab setting. Quote, acute lymphoblastic leukemia is a type of cancer of the white blood cells common in children, says Dr. Daniel Lacarzo, professor of pathology and immunology. Quote, there is about an 80% cure rate, but some children don't respond to treatment. For those cases, we are in need of alternative treatments. So they gave these kids natural broccoli compounds and found that it worked against this. It was really good. Quote, there has not been definitive studies showing how this compound interacts with blood cancers, but it does. So that's good news. And all of you, or not all of you, but many of you, are using it every day. Now mainstream medicine is catching on, and that's good. I'm Gary Nall. I'm going to go to our issue, a couple of the issues of the day, and then first up, here are some things to think about. This is from Science Daily. This is from the Canadian Medical Association Journal. Should physicians prescribe cognitive enhancers to healthy individuals? By the way, this is a phenomenon now in high schools and colleges. Parents are demanding their kids take the very drugs that others who are diagnosed with ADD and ADHD take because it gives them a better competitive edge in schools, make them more alert. I'll quote this. Physicians should not, I repeat, physicians should not prescribe cognitive enhancers to healthy individuals, states a report being published today in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. According to the research team, the study's authors provide their recommendations based upon the professional integrity of physicians, the drug's uncertain benefits and harms, and limited health care resources. This is a stimulant. This is speed. So we're all clear on this. Let's take something very scientific and very complicated, something in the order of a methamphetamine, or speed, or cocaine, or Ritalin. They all act very similarly. And now this is the new norm? This is how you get the advantage in school? As if the tests weren't easy enough to take? The whole emphasis in education today is how to pass a test, not how to learn anything, and certainly not critical thinking and not diverse thinking. Just pass the test. So they're saying that these neuropharmaceuticals, generally prescribed, quote, to treat attention deficit disorder, are often used by healthy people to enhance concentration, alertness, a phenomenon described as cognitive enhancement. Quote, individuals take prescription stimulants to perform better in school or at work, says the neuroscientist who is the head of this. However, because these drugs are available, people must request them from their doctors. Physicians are thus important stakeholders in this debate, given the risks and regulations of prescription drugs and the potential problem. And up to 11% of college students are taking them. And I think that's a very low figure. Do they ask what are the downsides? What can happen that's harmful? Well, they don't, but they should. And if you looked, some of the side effects of this are mania and psychoses and severe mood alteration, insomnia, codependence, cardiovascular problems, and psychoses. Let me think. Psychosis, mania, that means you could kill yourself or someone. And that's the latest fad in high schools and colleges. Now for our two issues of the day, and then I'll ask for your comments on this. As I mentioned, I tried a little study this week. I knew a person who was struggling. There are 8 people living in one house in Staten Island. They have a total of $2 a day per person to exist. They're in the extreme poverty level. And yet, for all outer appearances, you wouldn't know that this is not just a normal, regular person. This is from Laura Clausen Fallow for Daily Cause Labor. Quote, millions of Americans are living in the kind of poverty you generally associate with those you can save a child for the price of a cup of coffee a day ads. Deep poverty, defined as 50 cents or less of the official poverty, percent less than the official poverty level, hit a new record. And it's up. It's well over 20 million people. Now, this is deep poverty, meaning $2 a day. And that's severe. It means scraping by on $2,920 a year for a family of 4. This is a report that's been published by the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center. And they estimate 1 in 5 low-income American households have been living in extreme poverty in the last 12 years. The number of households in this category has increased by 130%. And there's over 3 million children in this category. And so that is what they're telling us. And one, who knew that that many Americans were living on $2 a day? But this ties in with it. It's a separate piece. It's from Piper Hoffman from CARE 2. It's short. It says, "You can't miss them when you walk around a city. The shapeless masses pressed up against buildings or into its corners. Homeless people sleeping outside, even now when the temperature is cold and dropping. The lucky ones preserve their body heat under a pile of blankets. Others make do with cardboard boxes or layers of clothes. Some die. 700 a year in the United States die. The solution seems obvious. Their lives would be saved if they slept in the warmth of a homeless shelter. But there aren't enough shelter beds to go around, and some of the beds that do exist come with very unappealing strings attached. What are they? The number one reason homeless people don't use shelters is the lack of available beds." This is from the former homeless person, Kailasa Shea. "Shelters are overcrowded in many, if not most, cities. People must line up hours before the facility opens to secure a bed for the night and go through the same process the next night and the next. Those who hold jobs, and many homeless people do, can't always be in the line at 4:30 in the afternoon, so they can't get a shelter bed. Those who choose to stand in line may give up finding employment because of the schedule. As if homelessness didn't cause enough physical discomfort, this is serious, shelters often add a couple, like bed bugs and body lice, which are inevitable when a different person that's homeless sleeps in a bed each night. Contagious diseases are also common among a population that lacks access to nutritious food and adequate medical care. Shelters don't have the means to quarantine the ill from the general population, making a night in a shelter a health risk. Hepatitis and tuberculosis are particularly common. Straddling in the line between uncomfortable and life-threatening is the lack of shoes that fit." You heard me right. Shoe theft is a common problem for the homeless, and is particularly common in shelters. Not having shoes or having only shoes that don't fit well can cause wounds that make it challenging or impossible to walk. And there are precious few places in a city where a homeless person can recuperate for a while without having shoes. A dog or a cat often is a homeless person's best friend and the only family they have. For young women on the street alone, a dog can also provide indispensable protection. But shelters for homeless people rarely accept their companion animals. Many people prefer sleeping outdoors to giving up their beloved friends. Some shelters close their doors to people who are under the influence of alcohol or illegal substances. This is an understandable rule that not surprisingly leaves a lot of people on the street. Nevertheless, some shelters are known as operation centers for drug dealers and are therefore considered dangerous. Some homeless people prefer their chances outside. There are few family shelters that accept single fathers with children. Sometimes the solution is for children to spend the night in the shelter while the dad sleeps outside on the street. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people often face discrimination and physical risk in homeless shelters. For instance, transgender women, born with male genitalia but identified and live as a woman, forced to take shelter with heterosexual men, are frequently subjected to verbal, physical, and sexual abuse. Some shelters simply deny entry to transgender people. Some faith-based homeless shelters require guests to sit through sermons and even personal appeals to convert to their host religion. And during these sometimes derogatory, sometimes coercive tactics day after day is too much for some, especially for people with strong religious convictions of their own. Now, you can do something to help end homelessness. The National Coalition for the Homeless recommends get connected to a coalition and volunteer at your state, local, and national housing and homeless advocacy group. Now, today, we're going to be putting up on our Progressive Radio Network website some organizations that help with homelessness that really help them. And I would suggest the Daily Bread in Florida. And also, that would be where I would start, because they, I'm getting in this week 100 sleeping bags, just so that 100 people can have something to use at night in the cold northeast part of Florida in the woods. I just finished filming my documentary. It's done now. It has to go into post-production, which will take about 6 months, on Poverty, Inc. And it took me 5 years to film it, and a lot of travel in a car. And the only way I could really do it and do it justice was, yes, all the leading advocates in the world I interviewed, but then you have to go into where people are. You have to go into their homes and shelters. And this is just one example of just one typical shelter that I filmed in, down in New Orleans. It was an old building, and I noticed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was a cold day, that people were lined up outside, going clear around the block. And they were waiting in line because there's only so many people that can get in. So when I went in the shelter, they have to go through a whole process, even if they've been there before. And then they'll get a meal. And then, if time permits, they can get a shower. Then at a certain early hour, they have to go into a bed. And the women go in one dorm and the men go in another. And there is a house, a small house, where families can stay. I think they've done a very good job, and I really commended them for their efforts. And that's why I use what they're doing in the shelter. A lot of shelters are just a dump, and the city knows better. But this is doing a good job. But they have five times more people needing shelter. And one of the people you'll see in the film was a person who was extremely articulate and lived in the shelter and was there to help people in the shelter. Now, this was a former successful business person and lost their business, lost their marriage, lost their home, lost everything. And then one day ended up, to their embarrassment, at that shelter where they had previously gone to volunteer and helping. And now they were there because they didn't have food or bed. I can't tell you how many thousands of individuals I've interviewed that is now the case. So I believe that you should find a shelter near you and take a day a week and go there and help them. They can always use volunteers. On a larger scale, I believe that we should do things that are realistic. The federal government, the state government, and the city governments have millions of square feet of unused office space that they're paying for that is empty. This is one of the reasons why I'm so opposed to the current nature of bureaucracies that are unaccountable to the people who pay for them. When you have millions of square feet in New York State of office space that can be converted into living space, then we should have an emergency act that allows no bureaucracy to stand in the way of rehabilitating these so that we have family centers devoted just to families, others to single individuals, and even those who are in derelict conditions. You can't, and you shouldn't, on a moral ground, deny someone who is drunk or who's on drugs a place to stay because you find that what they're doing is counterintuitive and counterproductive. There's still a human being there. And we have some more responsibility to try to reach out and help those people through counseling. We should have a counseling service in every one of these centers in the United States. We should be diverting money from the utterly, completely, totally corrupt military-industrial complex, the completely fascistic, Gestapo-like national security apparatus, and build humane, sustainable, living environment, green environments in every community in the United States, and build them that are sustainable. They have their own gardens. They have their own medical facilities. They have their own psychological counseling. They have their own crafts and skills. And so when a person goes there, they have a chance of gaining the tools necessary to reenter life, but at least treat them humanely when they're there. And we're doing none of the above. In fact, if anything, all across America, everywhere I went, including Los Angeles, every 10 days they get the homeless people out of a given area so that they don't become an eyesore. So now we're showing, and rightly so, our collective concern in humanity for the victims of the shooting, which we should, and we seem to have no empathy or compassion or creative insights left for all the other people who are suffering or dying with no notice given to their plight. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. Talk Back Time is now. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I noticed, I also promised I would give you 10 medical conditions that share symptoms with ADD and ADHD. Here they are. Asperger's and autism. Why? Because when you have autism spectrum disorder, it's not all the same. Many people can be functional in some areas, not in others. And if you're diagnosed with ADD and you really have autism, you're going to be mistreated. And it's only going to compound this problem and make it worse. Because children with autism are frequently overexcited when in high stimulus environments, and that can mimic hyperactivity. Believe it or not, hearing impairments. I can't tell you how many parents I've spoken with that didn't have anyone clue in on the fact that check the child's hearing before you diagnose them as hyper or ADD or ADHD. People that suffer from hearing impairments can experience problems in societal situations that may have underdeveloped communication. And they have a hard time paying attention because they can't really understand everything. Also, hypothyroidism. Yes, it is a big problem in adults, but it's also a problem in children. And it creates feelings of sadness and depression. One of the ways that I'm able to help people is correct the thyroid, and then suddenly you'll see moods lifted, feeling better. Iron deficiency anemia can cause lethargy and exhaustion and irritability. Lead toxicity can create all forms of problems, including decreased school performance, short-term memory problems, inability to concentrate, all of which can be misdiagnosed, and mental retardation. Let us be realistic. If a person has limited social skills and poor school performance issues and needs extra time to learn, how do we know what the mother was fed? And how do we know the health of the original conception? We don't. Was a person on junk foods during their pregnancy? Did they drink alcohol? Did they drink caffeine? Did they have mercury fillings in their mouth? Did they have shots? Did they get vaccinated? All that and many more can contribute to destroying neurons. There are protocols that can help those children. Ritalin is not one of them. And also, nutritional deficiencies and food allergies. Hypoglycemia or low blood sugar can cause the same identical symptoms of ADD, including aggression, hyperactivity, inability to sit still. Seizure disorders, very common, and sensory disorders and sleep disorders. All of those, I say, are frequently being misdiagnosed as ADD. A school teacher is not qualified on any level whatsoever to become a neurologist. And yet they're the ones saying this kid has got ADD and ADHD. It's only reconfirmed by the school psychologist or psychiatrist, then given the drug. And that just destroyed a kid's life. And who's going to take responsibility when the parent comes home and the kid's hanging in the closet? Yes. Rewatch the drug of our children for that reality. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart, and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing. Singing in the rain, dancing in the rain, yeah, 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 yeah.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Ed from Los Angeles. And I've got a lot of people. All of our lines are lit here. So I'm going to ask you to make your comment very quickly and then hang up and I'll address it if it needs addressing so we can get through a lot of calls. Hi, Ed, on TalkBack. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I just wanted to briefly mention, in addition to the dismissal of our homeless in this society, we also have a complete dismissal of our senior citizens. I'm an advocate and a caregiver to my girlfriend who's 70 years old. I'm 53, who had a stroke 2 years and 9 months ago. She's currently in a skilled subacute nursing center for hip replacement surgery. The staffing situation there is very poor. It's not the people staffing's fault. I blame Congress. I blame the lobbyists in Washington. I saved a woman's life last night who almost fell in the room that she's in of three people. And I just would like your comments on our dismissal and poor treatment of our senior citizens.
Ed, I spent over 1 year in the last 14 months, 12 months of those, filming senior citizens in their environment. If you've been listening, you heard me mention on various occasions I'd meet women who are living on cat food, who can't afford a telephone, who live literally in one room because they can't heat the rest of the house, who can't get their medicine, food, their mortgage or rent, and utilities. That's what we're up to. Yet we have a president, and we have a Congress, and we have a media that refuses to acknowledge that these people are alive. But then again, in their world, they're not alive. Just remember, most Americans, 270 million Americans, don't exist. Only those that contribute to the commercialization of something exist. Thank you, Ed. You'll see it in the movie. Lori from New Jersey. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Gary. Oh, I love you. You're the Earth's greatest gift ever. Thank you. My husband's getting ready to retire in the spring, and both of us are kind of need a revamping with our health. It's overwhelming how many diets there are out there, and all these books and diets are saying they're the best. We don't know how to even start to pick out a healthy vegetarian diet. There's so many of them that you're the only one I trust to direct us to the proper diet to just start all over again now.
All right. I wouldn't look at it as a diet, and that is part of the problem. That's why I've chosen never write a diet book as such. Rather, it's about making healthy choices. It's really simple. Just realize that every single thing you take in will have a consequence. Every single thing. This morning, as I was getting on the elevator, my next-door neighbor came out and said thank you. His wife came in yesterday, and they're a very nice couple. And he has cancer and had it operated on, but is a junk food junkie and a sugar addict and never gave any of the things on health a second thought. Now, when I said to his wife yesterday, I said, just remember, every single choice that you and he make will have an outcome, either a good or bad outcome. So think before you do anything and ask yourself, are you doing something because of habit, conditioning, taste preference, mood, or are you doing it because you want to enhance healing, live longer, help your heart? Because they're different choices. And then I gave an example. I gave an example of what I had in the morning to start my day. And I said, and yet you're there with a donut in your hand and a cup of coffee. And then I explained what the donut would do in the body and what the cup of coffee would do. And I said, you know, you're so smart about money. Imagine if I said this. I'm going to give you $1. And you're going to give me $1,000 in return. Would that be a good investment? He says, absolutely not. I said, then you've got 100 trillion cells. And each and every one of those cells is adversely affected with gene defects 10,000 times a day per cell. So if you could cut the defecting or the harm or the attack against your cells by half, would that be worth it? He said, yes. I said, or would it be better to actually defy your cells? Let's say that all 100 trillion cells are lined up on the floor, much like in one of those horrifying pictures of Mao or the Russians when they would go behind dissidents and just, you know, have them all nailed down, shoot them back the head. And I said, so imagine these cells are your body. But each day you get up and you load up a gun and you go behind each cell and you shoot it in the back of the head. And you just keep shooting all day long because there's an unlimited amount of ammunition. The ammunition, hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, coffee, cola, sugar drinks, marijuana, all the things. How long would you do it if you had the cell turn around and look you in the face before you shot it? Could you shoot someone in the face looking at them if you knew you were shooting yourself? He says, my God, I haven't thought about that. That's such a complex concept. I said, well, think about that, because every time you do the wrong thing, you're killing cells. I don't care how you justify it, rationalize it. I don't care how you wash it through. The left is great at washing every stupid thing they do through this intellectual conceit, but they still come out losing in the end. Isn't it amazing how many of the smart and best and brightest end up with cancer and heart disease, bankrupt or divorced? Their kids end up screwed up, messed up, you know, and then, but somehow don't tell them anything because, no, don't tell me I know everything. No, don't tell me I'm the ruler of my conscience. No, don't tell me I don't. This is what happens on the left and right, politically, on the ideological issues. It takes courage to get humble enough to understand that you're merely in denial of the real purpose of life. Honor your spiritual value. Because if you can't honor your spiritual value, what the hell are you living for? Live on the Upper East Side, the Upper West Side, to have a house in the Hamptons, a nice place in Jersey, on the shore, on the coast, on the village. What is the purpose of it? Just to watch yourself age and realize the only legacy you have are possession or accomplishment? There's got to be something more. So how can I help people make a change if they're not humble enough to realize how significant life is? Life. All life. Now connect yourself to someone else's life. Now your life is sacred and someone else is sacred. Now see how easy it is or how hard it is to walk by someone suffering on the street without realizing that could be my mother, my brother, my sister, or myself. How can I walk by with indifference? Well, on the Upper West Side, it's easy. On the Upper East Side, they don't even look, right? They have, I think, street cleaners come out, and if you don't have a certain amount of income, you're put into a trash barrel and hauled away by the mayor. What a putz. So that's what we're dealing with. So don't look at the diet. Look at the choice. It is the choice of an exchange that matters. It is what will determine in a year, 2 years, or 5 years whether you and your husband are healthy or not. So if I ask you, is it a good idea to have orange juice or a cola in the morning, what would you answer?
Orange juice, grapefruit juice.
Okay. If I said it's better for you to take a prescription psychiatric drug or to meditate, what would you tell me?
Yeah, I would probably use the meditation and yellow glasses.
Okay.
Yellow sunglasses.
All right. Is it better to go out and to look a calf in the face and cut its head off so you can have its veal meat? Or is it better to eat some grains and legumes, nuts and seeds and fruits and vegetables?
Right. Yeah.
If you can't kill it, don't eat it. And if you can kill it, then look in the mirror and ask yourself, what are you really doing? Okay.
So where
do you need a book to find these answers? This is common sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But just keep paying attention to common sense and reason, cause and effect. All right? I do have a major film coming out on how to be a healthy vegetarian. It's called Chew on This. It'll be out in about 3 months with a book to go with it on how to be a healthy vegetarian. Thanks a lot, Lori from New Jersey. We'll take one more. Let's say hello to John from Long Island. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary. Gary, it was a perfect segue. Your song, Singing in the Rain, my topic is happiness. Gary?
I'm listening.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm in my car. And I believe it's so important. You have a grading system, and you put happiness at the top of the list.
There is no finer virtue to health than happiness. John, I'll put it this way. Let me be emphatic. I have never met a person in my life who was healthy who was not happy. You can't be healthy unless you're happy. And that's why there's so many unhealthy people, because they're not happy. So shouldn't we be paying attention to happiness, not just which vitamin to take?
That's correct. Now, with the subconscious is so strong, and I know we get programmed, and I know there's some techniques out there to reprogram. Dr. Lipton has Psych-K. I know I've seen his videos. Dr. Grayson has EFT, where we can reprogram ourselves. And I think this is just good for all the audience. Could you just maybe give us a couple of techniques? We can read all the books. We can listen to all the videos. But just some techniques that we could reprogram ourselves.
I've already written extensively on this. In fact, I wrote a major book on reprogramming ourselves in a healthy way and not allowing the subconscious or the unconscious to control it. And here's what I'm going to do. Because of you, John, we're blaming you, John. John from Long Island, anyone, including you, who comes into my office today, I will give a free copy of the book to. $25 book, my gift to you, John, for raising a very important point. How about that, buddy?
Gary, I like that. And also, I was on your website. I had some photos from the anti-fracking.
We had to take down your naked photos, John. That is no way to become a healthy vegetarian. Well, maybe a little bit.
Very attractive. Thank you, Gary, for all that you do for us.
All right, John from Long Island, come into the office today, or anyone else listening. You come in today, and because of John focusing on happiness as the progenitor to health, I'm going to give you a book on exactly what he was asking. How do we become conscious instead of living through unconscious manipulation? How do we take control back over our lives instead of impulse and impulsivity and judgment without going to neutral and stop personalizing everything to see what am I really thinking and why? How am I acting and why? What are the likely outcomes of my choices and why? All right? We're 2307 Broadway, 84th and Broadway. I just want to notify Neil in the closet. Get out some books. We may have some people coming, and I don't care who it is. Just give them a free copy. All right? They're not for sale, by the way. Just free. I want to play a short segment now. This may go over some of the timelines of some of the individuals' stations. PFW, BAI, KPFK, and others. If we go a little over, please understand that I'll be continuing a discussion on this, but you can listen to on the telephone at 832-280-0066 or on our direct internet. But we may have to end it a little short, but at least you'll get the message. Listen to this.
Austin, Texas. High up in a university tower, a sniper shoots at unsuspecting victims in the plaza below as scores of students flee.
Police have apprehended a lone gunman in an attempt on the life of President Ronald Reagan outside the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C.
6-hour standoff with police. William Cruz is accused of a violent murder rampage that killed 6 people, including 2 policemen.
Jeffrey Dahmer stands convicted of strangling and dismembering 17 young men and boys throughout the greater Milwaukee area.
Charged with the raping and killing of a 7-year-old girl in a woman's bathroom.
Life imprisonment for drowning her 5 children. Family bath sentences.
For the slayings of his mother.
The bludgeoning death of her 2 young
children. Custody for the stabbing death of his daughter.
For 3 months before the murder.
Police department.
Yeah, I just killed my 2 daughters.
Sir.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened. Okay, what's going on right now?
I just freaked out and killed them.
Are you on medication?
Yeah.
What kind of meds are you on, sir?
I'm on antidepressants.
I have to say, whenever I read in the newspaper of some violent act, one of the first questions I ask is, was the person on medications?
Virginia Tech or the school shootings or the... my first thought is always, I wonder what drug he was taking.
There are side effects to the use of drugs and also very damaging and dangerous long-term effects, which psychiatrists often don't consider as being important.
They induce violence
They induce self-violence. They induce distortions of reality leading to hallucinations. They induce a whole variety of psychiatric problems, which are then typically treated with more psychiatric drugs.
We're not talking about a rash. We're not talking about dry mouth. We're not talking about nausea. We're talking about sudden, compulsive, overwhelming suicidal or homicidal urges. We're talking about violent deaths. We're talking about crippling injuries.
Psychiatric drugs are rampant in society today. It's become really an epidemic.
Just to complete this thought, as many of you know, I have finished filming a major new documentary that will be out in a year or less called Manufacturing Madness. I have been able to document and prove that every one of the major 61 mass killings that have gone on went on because people were on antipsychotic or antidepressant medication. So in our time of mourning and in our time of care, when all the blame will be placed upon the weapon, I have to remind us, what about all the people who are on meds, who then use the weapon in a way that is irresponsible, virtually demonic? No energy, no investigation, no challenge to the psychiatric community, to the way they diagnose, to the overdiagnosis, to the overprescription, to the over-medicating of our children and our adults. And then when they do go off and they kill people and themselves, we look at just the weapon. And though I'm opposed to automatic weapons, I'm very much opposed to the 100 million people in the world who are on antipsychotic medications, antidepressants every day, 3,000 dying every month, and not a word about it. Just to keep us aware, there are a lot of other pieces to this puzzle than just one. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi in our studio in New York. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Wow. I have this to put the cherry on the sundae here. There's a letter from someone. She says, "I'm sorry I'm writing this anonymously. However, I want to ask you a question. In 1985, did you have a very important book contract that was then canceled on the day you were supposed to have signed it? If the answer is yes, then you can read further." She says, "Do you know that there's a group of individuals working at the behest of some powerful pharmaceutical people who are looking at any way they can to slow you down and discredit you? Would you believe that they consider you the biggest single threat against their interests anywhere in the world? And that they will do anything to infiltrate your organization and plant misinformation and stop you from having general public acceptance anywhere by any means that they can? Did you really think that you could write over 30 articles, do several hundred broadcasts, produce and distribute 10 documentaries against pharmaceutical interest, and no one would pay attention to them? There have been several instances in the past where they have reached behind the scenes to close doors on your career and undermine your reputation. So my question is this, for me to you, do you think this is a legitimate letter, or is this just some wackaloon?"
I have no idea. I do know that a major book contract was canceled. It was actually for three books the day I was going to sign it with my agent. And there was never an explanation given except we decided not to after 3 months of negotiating. A television series was canceled after we'd already filmed the first four segments. Alice Fennell, who was an Emmy Award-winning producer, was producing the series, and she was never given an explanation, except that someone on high had spoken with someone on high at the network, this is a major network, to say, pay them and for what they've done, kill the series. I'm fully aware, Luann, that because of my position and the forms I use, articles, radio, documentaries, television, that when you go up against the people I go up, whether it's the FDA with the war on health, or the drugging of our children, or death by medicine, or the nuclear industry with knocking on the devil's door, or the Defense Department with American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed, these people are going to know instantaneously that there's someone writing, producing, or doing something against them. They have firms that collect everything on them, and then they decide how to handle it. Now that we're engaged in a government that is virtually complicit in abridging the Constitution and destroying our freedoms that we have taken for granted, it is not will they try to stop me, it's just when and at what level. The good news is that my audience, the people who have been following this program and my work for a long time, know that when I present information, it's always documented, and there's always that opportunity for it to stop. So if I give them a whole lot of good material, then even if I am stopped, it can go on. So it doesn't end. Their mistake is thinking that if they stop me, they stop a movement. The movement is too big. There are too many movements. There are too many people. The internet is too powerful. And there are a lot of people out there who have angered special interest groups. A lot. There are thousands I personally know. That doesn't mean we should be cavalier. It doesn't mean we should be paranoid. I am not. It just means that we call them out into the light of day to debate. They won't. We challenge them in our films by name and photograph. They're fully aware of that. They'll do anything they can to get back. That's why we're very concerned when we see the lies of the quackbusters and others who attack ad hominem. And we also know of how many front organizations are out there that the average person wouldn't know is a front organization. How many groups are infiltrated by provocateurs? How many people do you think for the CIA, FBI have infiltrated Pacifica stations over the last 40 years? And so not to assume this is to be irresponsible. But none of that will slow me down. I don't come from fear. So there's nothing they could do to stop me. Not by fear. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Let's go over and say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
I'm excellent. What's on the agenda today?
We're talking about the fiscal cliff, and hopefully we would hear something of a budget pretty soon, but the White House has just rejected the Republicans' latest offer.
Good. Well, of course, you know, Utrece, that the fiscal cliff is a myth. Mm-hmm. The real cliff that we should be paying attention to is the $245 trillion that four, I repeat, four banks, including Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and Citibank, Bank of America, hold in derivatives. And those represent a greater amount of debt potential that the American public would have to bail out than the entire world gross domestic product. So they're playing with derivatives, betting on issues. We're having to back them up, and we've allowed these organizations to use debt as their leverage through the Federal Reserve. That's the real issue, and no one is talking about it. So have a great program today, Utrece.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary.
Bye.
Cowboys, the wrestlers, the tumblers, the clowns, the roustabouts that move the show at dawn.
The music, the spotlights, the people, the towns, your baggage with the labels pasted on.
The sawdust and the horses and the smell. The towel you've taken from the last hotel.
There's no business like show.